every day from 11 a.m. till midnight and beyond. More information at BuffaloWildWings.com. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. So with no further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's start the show.
Not a game, not a game, not a game. We talking about practice. It's easy to sum it up when you just talk about practice. I mean, listen, we talking about practice. I mean, how silly is that, man? We talking about practice. We talking about practice, man.
Indeed, we are talking about practice.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, with something like that.
Okay, is that today?
That is today.
Dang.
Today, indeed. That voice you hear, my good friend, Juan Uriarte.
What's up, guys? It's Juan Uriarte.
Sitting in for Derek and Noobs. We also have Josh Lang, trainee, in the building right now.
What's good? What's up, everyone? Yeah, hope you can hear me.
Yeah, you're good. All right, cool. Oh, yeah, you guys don't have headphones, so just guess.
Yeah. I'm guessing, yeah.
All right, yeah.
I did that last week. I'll do it again.
Oh, yeah, you guys are good.
I was waiting for the audience to respond, but I guess that's not how radio works.
No.
Yeah, I guess not. No.
I'm your host, Jarrell Gilbert, as usual, back from moving, even though I'm still moving, in the worst move of my life. Our show is only a half hour this week because political debates and your presidential nominees are going to be talking about stuff.
Important thing is Drew.
Oh, yeah.
I guess. I mean, is that more important? This is, like, I'm just looking at the show rundown, and I don't know how we're going to get to all this. This is a terrible week.
Lightning round. Just go. That's how you do things.
It's a really terrible week to...
Tragic lightning round.
To 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But we'll do our best. So we're going to get to the Niners looking awful. Like I told you guys they would this year. Ooh. Even though after week one, many of you told me that we were back and this and that. And I told you I wouldn't hold my breath. And I'm glad I was on the right side of that. Wasn't a very bold stance to take at the time, but that's the case. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, we'll get to them. Patriots keep rolling. Pretty sure any one of us could start at QB next week, and they're still going to get a W. Carolina gets smashed by the Purple People Eaters. Is Sam Bradford good? Because I'm confused.
Their defense is good.
Their defense is insane.
Yeah.
Juan squad, the Chargers cannot catch a break. Literally. LeBron says he fears for his son's life with police brutality. Steph speaks out on the riots in Charlotte. And on Colin Kaepernick, Josh Norman and ODB faced off this weekend. And we would get to the Dodgers winning the NL West and Vin Scully calling his last Dodgers game at home.
That was pretty touching. I saw all the players wave at him. I was like, oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it was super cute. But we'll let Derek come and
gush about it
when he gets back from LA. Shouts to Derek and the whole Isumaki family. But unfortunately, we have to start the show with the tragic passing of Marlins ace pitcher, 24-year-old right-handed phenom Jose Fernandez. If you haven't heard the news by now, Jose Fernandez died in a boating accident on Sunday. And it's tragic. I don't want to talk about it too long. If you really want to get some insight into it, I would definitely recommend checking out the Dan Lebertard show. You could just search his podcast. They spent nearly 3 hours today specifically talking about that. So I would go there if you guys really want your Jose Fernandez talk because he sheds a lot more light than I can. But just real quick, if you didn't know of him or much about him, super, just very outgoing, vibrant young guy from Cuba. Matter of fact, he defected when he was 15. He got caught, or I think he was 18 when he finally made it to the States. He got caught three different times trying to leave Cuba and got put in prison. And his first time in prison, he was only 15, leaves behind a pregnant girlfriend, which is awful on its own. And There was a really cool shot. I was checking out Instagram earlier. There's this really cool shot of him after Giancarlo Stanton hits a bomb the other night, and just him, Jose Fernandez in the dugout, just being super excited, jumping up and down, cheering, being just all this emotion. That's who he was. And it's tragic anytime we lose someone that early. It's tragic, especially when, you know, someone so full of life that meant so much to so many people passes early. Matter of fact, let's hear real quick from Dan Le Batard, and then we'll keep going here.
Over the weekend, beautifully written, and you talk about Fernandez representing freedom to so many Cuban Americans, and we could hear in that description too, with the grandmother tuning into the radio and trying to hear her grandson pitch these games. Why, Jose, when you look at all the other Cuban-American players here?
I mean, the way that he played, right? It felt like Hispanic music. It was the way that he played was ethnic. It was flamboyant. It was colorful. And so what you'd get, we're a real fickle sports town, and we don't move the attendance meter for much of anything, especially in baseball, where there have been a great many betrayals. But what you would get on the days that he pitched is kind of a pilgrimage, you know, of people who identified with his story. I mean, I couldn't get my mom to the ballpark, man. Like, she is mad at the Marlins. She loves baseball, but for 20 years, she's mad at the Marlins because of all the, you know, the bad things that management has done. And so my mother in her old age, you know, wants to go to the ballpark on days that he pitched. I'm sorry, this is embarrassing. And so you just get a lot of people who wanted to be close to that story, you know, because he was so strong, and he was a symbol. So I'm sorry.
Dan, don't apologize.
No.
Don't apologize at all.
We totally understand.
So you can obviously hear the emotion in Dan Levitard's voice. Obviously, Dan Levitard of Cuban descent. And Jose Fernandez just meant a lot to that town in particular that has a very heavy Cuban influence. And if you guys got a chance to check out any of the pregame, it was incredibly emotional. Every one of the players for the Marlins today wore Jose Fernandez's number with his last name across their jersey. And D. Gordon did something pretty crazy. He batted righty for the first pitch he saw, and then switched to lefty and hit the first. He did that as a tribute because that's Jose Fernandez was a right-handed batter, and he switched to lefty and hit a home run, his first of the season. Damn. Which was pretty fitting. This guy represents everything that is the American dream, did everything to get out of an oppressive country, and made it here to the States to make millions of dollars. He was a year away from a $200 million contract. There'll be a lot of fallout from this. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Marlins as they move on. But yeah, it's just tragic story. I'm kind of at a loss for words. I don't really know how to lighten this.
You're bumming me out, Jiro.
All right, let's move on to more sad news for Miami, if we can. Pat Riley tells a group of reporters, including Ira Winderman with the Sun Sentinel, that Bosch's career is over with the Miami Heat. Chris Bosch has been battling a blood clot issue for several years now. And the doctors, in his recent physical, the doctors did not pass him again. And it really does look like this may be the end of the line for an 11-time All-Star, a 2-time NBA champ. And God, what a gut punch to the city of Miami and the fans there. And I was just wondering, I mean, off the top of your head, when was the last time you remember a player in their prime having to leave?
Well, I mean, he's leaving because he's not healthy, you know. And,
right.
You know, it's for the best if he doesn't continue playing because he could die while playing.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, it does suck because, you know, he was a great player. And actually, I was watching an interview about this. Somebody on the radio actually was saying that it was the death of the Big Three, which I found kind of funny because the Big Three have been dead for a while in my opinion, right?
Like, the second LeBron left to Cleveland.
Yeah, the guy was saying, like, well, LeBron left, and then the Big Three was just like, well, the Big Three were broken up. But he said that this was the stamp on it. This is death of the Big Three. And it kind of is. I mean, it's over. He's not going to be playing again. He said he's very adamant that he's going to return because he keep trying to like rehabilitate himself. But it just doesn't look good, you know. And it's probably for the best he doesn't keep playing. But it sucks, you know, because he was great.
He was great. Oftentimes kind of overlooked because he did play with LeBron and D-Wade, who much more flashy players. They get a lot more attention, more ball-dominant players. And, you know, he did kind of play second or third fiddle to those guys often. He completely changed his game. He was a low post, back to the basket kind of guy when he got to Miami. And he completely transformed his game to be a stretch four. Started shooting, I think he shot over the last few years, somewhere around 40% from three, which for a seven-footer, not named Kevin Durant or Dirk Nowitzki, that is absolutely insane. And especially when that's not your your game, it's just, it's crazy. You know, they say ball is life. That's a hashtag on a lot of posts nowadays, but it really isn't. I mean, it's a big portion of a lot of people's lives. I know when I was younger, that's all I did was play basketball. Now that I'm older, I can't tell you the last time I actually hooped.
You called up, yeah. But you should, though. It'd be fun to see you try.
Yeah. It would be interesting. But, it is sad. I mean, look, it's a hard stance to take, you know, feeling sympathy for the multi-millionaire, right? But he's still having his career most likely cut short, and he does something that we all wish we could do, which is something we love and get paid millions of dollars to do it. And, you know, he plays a game for a living, and now it looks like he's going to have to start thinking about other things.
Other career options? I mean, he's got a lot of money. He should put that money somewhere. I just hope he doesn't go crazy like some other basketball players.
Yeah.
Hopefully he finds himself somewhere, you know, a little niche that he can do. Because, you know, not, you know, like, ball is life, but, you know, there's more to living besides that. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, if you're lucky, you get 11 years in the league, you know.
Yeah, and how many rings does he have?
Two.
You see, that's great. Like, yeah, no one could say he's a failure.
No, he had a great career.
Yeah.
Good for him. It's just, God, for Miami sports fans today, they must just feel cursed. Because on the other side of that, yeah, their football team won, yeah, but it's still the Dolphins.
Yeah, I actually started Ryan Tannehill. Yeah, 19 points.
No kidding.
What? And that's with like a pick six and like two receptions.
Yeah, and they barely beat Terrell Pryor led offense in the Browns, who's on like their eighth string quarterback now.
They won. That's all that matters.
Yeah, they won. Yeah, but it was kind of like losing because it was to the Browns.
It's the Dolphins, right? Yeah.
That was not a very promising. I mean, it wasn't convincing victory, to say the least.
No, definitely was not. It was.
You guys are haters because I enjoyed that game a lot.
If they didn't have kicking, if the Browns did not have kicking issues, they most likely won that game. But I think they lost their punter and kicker yesterday, so that's...
Oh, nice. Dude, kickers the punter that they got from Carolina?
They win games, man.
Nice.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Punters, kickers win games.
Yeah, they shouldn't be part of the sport, but that's a story
football,
for another...
It's called football, okay? They need to be a part. There needs to be a foot in there somewhere.
Well, what else are you going to call it? You got to take the foot out otherwise.
Smash ball?
I was listening to a comedian saying that football is the most American thing in the world because there's already a sport called, you know, football.
Yeah.
They're like, no! That's no longer football. This is football. That is soccer. Like, that's the most American thing to do in the world.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless America.
I'm down with it. Where do you guys want to go from here? I mean, we could talk Niners. We could talk about your Chargers if you'd like.
Yeah, you can talk about sad stuff if you want. I could cry now.
Yeah, we've been on kind of a down tempo.
Yeah.
And just to continue that
theme.
You beat
the Jaguars last week.
Oh, yeah, the Jaguars, right? I was felt so happy. And I was like, yeah, man, Phillip Rivers, what, four touchdowns?
They're back, baby.
And I was just like, yeah, but it was the Jaguars.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought you guys were going to beat the Colts for sure, and the Chargers just
I thought we were going to beat the Colts for sure, too. I mean, okay, what, they were...
The Chargers invent ways to lose games.
You know what? It's not only that. It's also the fact that nobody in that team can stay healthy. Not at all.
Like, so
week one, you lose Keenan Allen.
Yep.
Week two, you lose Danny Woodhead.
Right.
Week three, you lose Teo, right?
Yeah.
And then even before that, in the preseason, you lost Brandon Oliver, Stevie Johnson.
Yep.
I mean... People are sick. Gates didn't play. His hamstring's busted. Bosa, which I'm so mad at right now, also not playing because his hamstring hurts.
Right.
Oh, baby. You know?
Maybe so, if he was at...
so mad at him right now. Gosh. So there's like... Everything in the world is against us. And Phillip Rivers just wants to throw the ball and get touchdowns. My favorite part about the whole game, I don't know if you saw it, he was trash-talking somebody and the ref pulled a card. Like, they called a foul and they're like, 15 yards... And they're like, hey, man, that's your warning. And so after Travis Benjamin just caught a 40-yard catch, they moved it back 15 yards. And then Phillip Rivers was like, what? And I'm like, Phillip Rivers, like, All you do is trash talk. This rule was invented for you. And you can't, like, keep your mouth shut for a second.
Yep.
Oh, man, that was, I enjoyed that. It was really, it made me really happy. It made my heart just, like, you know, stop. But, yeah, man, it sucks because, like, I really want them to win. And I just know that, I feel like they don't want to win because they keep losing. But, hey, Melvin Gordon's looking great.
Melvin Gordon has finally started to break out a little bit.
I think he's got like 6 touchdowns in 3 games.
Does he really?
Yeah, he scored 2 in the first game, 3 in the second. I don't know. He's got a bunch of touchdowns, man.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I wish I would have drafted him because I drafted him last year and I got, you know.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of how that game goes sometimes. I didn't mean to lament the fact that your Chargers just cannot catch any sort of luck here, and just like I said, keep inventing ways to lose games.
Yeah,
and it's just, I mean, after that Kansas City game, I thought you guys would have a nice bounce back. You beat the Jags.
Yeah, I know.
And then the Colts, who have looked essentially helpless all season long, figure out a way to pull one out, and you guys are now trailing the Raiders in the division.
Yeah, we're 1-2, and yeah, we're in the bottom. We're losing our division. It's okay. The Raiders suck, right? You know what I'm saying, right? You don't like the Raiders, right?
I don't have a problem with the Raiders. I like this young team. They're fun to watch.
Yeah, they are.
Speaking of teams that are fun to watch, or I don't know how fun they are, but impressive, the Broncos in that division, 3-0.
I really like that new quarterback.
Simeon?
As much as I don't like the Broncos because they're in the same division, that guy is so patient.
Yes.
And he's just in that pocket. He's got great ball awareness.
Yeah.
And he's, like, really athletic. Like,
he really is.
When would you see Peyton Manning run for the first down?
Never.
Right?
When was the last time you saw Peyton Manning run?
Yeah, so like when I'm watching the Broncos game and I see the quarterback running, I'm so confused. I'm like, what is this? What's going on? After years of not seeing a quarterback move,
right.
I was like, oh, wow, a quarterback can actually run out of the pocket and get first down. And, you know, Simeon did that, and I was really impressed.
You mentioned his patience. That was something that a lot of the coaches were talking about, I remember, in that Thursday night game against Josh, your Panthers. I remember, the announcers bringing that up and talking about how patient he was and he's poised in the pocket.
Right.
And you watch him play and he just stands in the pocket and, you know, he moves around within the pocket. He doesn't break containment like a lot of young quarterbacks do and just start trying to create on his own. He just, oftentimes, like you'll see a Drew Brees do or Tom Brady, where you're just taking a step forward, step back, left, right, whatever, and just avoiding the pressure by inches, but still staying in the pocket.
Right.
And delivering the ball on time, it's been really impressive. And that defense, I mean, come on, that defense is a joke. They're so good.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but like he's not like a rookie, right? Like he's been in the league for a bit, right?
I think they drafted him in 2015.
So he's his first year starting. But
he
didn't have the job last year. What they started Brock
Osweiler
over him, and he just went for the money and left a different city. So he won the job, and like all preseason they talk about who's gonna be their quarterback, and when I found out it was Simeon, I was like, wow, I was really shocked.
Yeah.
And after watching him play that first game, I was like, okay, I can see it. Like he didn't do great in that first game, but he did enough to be like, wow, this kid can play.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this last game he got a really good touchdown to Emmanuel Sanders. I wish it was, you know, Demaryius Thomas, because
he threw
to both of them.
Yeah, I know they both got touchdowns, and he was chucking the ball deep all game, which is awesome. Which is a lot more than we can say for the 49ers faithful and our starting quarterback, Blaine Gabbert, who, boy, well, like I said, I told you so. After that first week one, I was talking all sorts of trash. And keep in mind, I grew up, the first present ever handed to me was a 49er football in the crib when I was born. So I grew up a Niners fan. This is how my family came together. We fight except on Sundays. For those 3.5 hours while the Niners are on, we're all cool, and then we go back to fighting.
I was going to be like, oh, because of church. Be like, no, I'm taking it somewhere else.
No. Football. Football was our religion, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So I grew up a Niners fan. Now, it's harder and harder lately, especially once they moved to Santa Clara. I immediately began to distance myself from the team because they're not the same team I grew up with. In Santa Clara, no offense to anyone who's from there, it's not a great place. I kind of hate it, and I grew up not far from there. So, but for all of you who hit me up on Twitter after I came out before week one and said the Niners are going to be terrible and we're going to win anywhere between 3 and 6 games this season. And after week one, started talking a lot of trash on my timeline. My timeline's been pretty quiet, guys. Where you at? Because I told you so.
Well, they just got chewed up by, was it Christian Michael?
Yes, who hasn't looked good in any game at all, ever.
I'm so mad I dropped him. I was like, oh, like, and I picked somebody else up. And then guess what? He just explodes.
Yeah, well, the Niners basically just let him run down the middle of the field all game. So I'm not sure what was going on there. That was the only surprise. Their offense not moving the ball, there's nothing shocking about that. Their offense, even in week one, looks stagnant. I mean, Carlos Hyde looks good running the ball. But other than that, I mean, they might have the worst wide receiving core in the league. And I hate to say it because I really like some of those guys. Like Torrey Smith, been a big fan of him for years. Quentin Patton, when he came into the league, I was really high on him just because I thought he had a crazy work ethic. And I thought he may have dynamic ability. But, man, they really they look awful.
They won week one, right?
Yeah, that
was
it.
Against
the Rams on a late Monday night. And I don't know how much that has to do with it, but there will be no football game the rest of the season played that starts at 7:30 at nighttime. So yeah. I don't know what that factors in.
A little double feature or something like that. Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was I was like, people were blowing up, like Niners fans, like, oh my gosh, we're back. We're better than ever. It's like, it's the Rams. You know, they used to be the St. Louis Rams. It's still the Rams.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what city they're in. They're
I mean,
still
granted,
the Rams.
They got a win this weekend, I believe. But yeah,
they're 2-1 now, actually. So yo, they're looking better.
Yeah, they beat the Seattle. Yeah.
Yeah, but Seahawks ain't looking too good either, dude. Russell Wilson just got hurt also. I think he messed up his Achilles?
His ankle, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be out for a bit, which good, because I hate that guy.
Oh god,
I don't hate him. He just got
I'll say it for you, I hate Russell Wilson.
It's hard to root for him.
Is it because he's with Sierra now? Is that what it
is? That doesn't help. Actually, it made me like him slightly more. I just, everything he says is a cliche. You've never heard one real thing come out of his mouth. And I can say it on these airwaves, and I don't care if you're mad at me. I hate Russell Wilson. He's fun to watch, but other than that, he does nothing for me as a person. He is so boring. Even his commercials are boring.
I think after getting it on with Sierra, after getting married, I think he just lost his magic. That's what it was. That's why he's no good no more, you know? That's what it is. Sierra took his magic away. That's how Sierra stays young. She's a succubus. You know, she steals a young man's soul.
First Future, now Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
When's the last time you heard from Future? No one's heard from him. He's gone.
So, Niners fans, feel free to hit me up, flipside_radio. Love to talk to each and every one of you. I had a whole list that I was going to do this whole thing where I called you guys out on air. But I'm not going to do that because that's petty. And,
I still have the list though.
Yeah, I still have the list. And I'm not saying I'm not a petty person. I definitely am. But we only have 6 more minutes of the show because we have political debates. So,
come on, man. Let's go lightning round.
All right. Lightning round. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. Go.
He got a touchdown to, his first touchdown to Dez Bryant, mm-hmm. which is, makes me really happy because last year Dez Bryant, you know, had really bad luck. And Dak, honestly, doesn't look that bad for being a, you know,
yeah.
rookie.
He looks like he could be the future of that
franchise. What about Tony Romo?
Well, Tony's going to have a few more years, I'm sure, even though he breaks every single year.
He's so delicate.
He's like the entire Chargers season in one person.
That's sad. I'm just really stoked for Dak. I think he's doing great. I'm looking forward to watching him play some more.
Yeah. I hear you there. Let's see what else we got. LeBron says he fears for his life or for his son's life with everything going on. What do you got on that? Anything? He really said a whole lot without saying anything in actuality.
I feel like right now a lot of athletes are chiming in on the whole, you know, I guess, controversy that's going on, winning awareness to, you know, I guess, police brutality and stuff, right? So, like, you see it from Colin Kaepernick to, Richard Sherman mm-hmm. doing press conference. Entire teams now raising their fist or kneeing, you know?
Yeah.
So, I feel like it's just, like, it was just about time we heard. I mean, basketball's not playing right now, so we don't see them protesting yet.
Right.
So, I mean, he's just hitting the iron while it's hot. I mean, I didn't hear what he said, but I can only assume he really does feel the way he feels, you know? Why else would he go out there and just say this stuff? I mean, does he need more publicity? He just won, you know, last...
Right.
You know, the last.
I would play the quote, but again, we're down to 4 minutes in the show, so maybe we'll save that for another time when it's slow in sports, but by that time, we'll probably have moved on. Josh Norman and Odell Beckham met again, and you had...
It was a lot of fun.
It was a ton of fun. It was what I was looking forward to all All Sunday was that matchup. So
I watched a rundown. It was like a sheet, almost like an MMA fight, saying their stats and their strengths and stuff, and like who would take what round. And it was really funny. Like they were playing on it because last year they just went at it. That's when he was playing with the Panthers, right?
Yeah.
And I was fun to watch, you know. But this year, oh my gosh, so much better, because I feel like obviously Josh Norman got the better of Odell Beckham.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah.
To the point where Odell Beckham started crying.
Yeah.
And like throwing
he threw a temper tantrum.
Literally like pulling on his like jersey and like throwing his helmet out at the like the cage where they kicked the ball, and the cage dropped and hit him in the face.
Yeah.
Eli had to go over there and calm him down. Their coach, the wide receiver coach, had to go over there and say, "Hey man, act right." Like, you know, like being a little kid, like when we get home, you're gonna get whooped. You know? Like,
yeah, right.
And he still couldn't control himself. And it's embarrassing to see him lose his composure, but it's a lot of fun.
Sure. Josh, Your Panthers. Yeah, what happened, man?
Laid an egg.
Absolutely.
They do that. It's kind of this team's kind of reminding me of not last year's team, but the team that went 7-9-1, which is very disheartening because they have a lot of potential, but that offense is just not clicking yet.
Right.
Which sucks because, like, you know, they have pretty much all the same pieces that
they have Calvin Benjamin back.
So yeah, like, it's almost like that's throwing Cam off because like that was like his favorite target before. So now he's like trying to readjust, like everyone like trying to distribute the ball.
He's also not running for as many touchdowns as he was last year.
No, he's not.
Good, because I'm tired of seeing him give away balls.
Something like that. I have no idea.
See, and then with Jonathan Stewart still out, right? He's going to be out for
he's going to be out for a couple more weeks.
That old man, gosh, he's great.
Yeah, they need to replace him. They probably should have drafted somebody in this last draft. I mean, unless Cameron Artis Payne shows up, which he didn't really impress me all that much yesterday. Yep. Like, they're probably going to get somebody in the draft. But, you know, they have all the potential. Their defense looked great. I mean, the Vikings only won because the Panthers' offense was completely inept and couldn't score. So
Minnesota Vikings defense is insane.
Great. No, yeah, they're looking like the Broncos were or are currently.
Are they 3-0 right now?
What? Yeah, 3-0. Yep. Despite losing Adrian Peterson and Teddy Bridgewater.
Oh yeah, Bridgewater. When that came out, I was like really shocked. Like, what are they going to do? You know what? You know what you do? You get that other guy. You get Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
Permanent dumb face to come and play.
Yeah,
and within like a week, he knows your playbook and he just kills it.
We definitely want to revisit this next week because I don't know what's happening there. But hey, boys, that's all the time we got. I really appreciate you guys stopping by. For Juan, feel free to come back, brother. This was fun.
Oh, I had a good time.
Josh, as always, thank you. Let's see. Let's shout out the sponsors, and then we'll get into this political debate that I know everyone is just biting at the chop for. Talking About Practice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Hearing Aid Center, changing lives through better hearing since 1949. Chico Hearing Aid Center is devoted to providing the best hearing possible with a try before you buy program and state-of-the-art hearing aids. Chico Hearing Aid Center provides hearing evaluations at no cost. To determine your benefit with hearing aids, for an appointment, you can call 342-8132. We'll be back next week. Derek will be back from L.A. I'm sure he's going to have a whole lot of trash to talk about the Dodgers winning the NL West, so I'll probably cut his mic off. Other than that, stay tuned. Thanks for listening, talking about practice. Stay tuned for the political debate right here on 90.1 KZFR.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And tonight, Le Show and the first part of Skyway Connection are preempted for the presidential debate, and that will start in about 2 minutes. So until then, we'll have Radio Paradise, and then we'll have the debate. Enjoy.
Is sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. Have been agreed to by the campaigns. The 90-minute debate is divided into six segments, each 50 minutes long. We'll explore three topic areas tonight: achieving prosperity, America's direction, and securing America. At the start of topic areas tonight, achieving prosperity, America's direction, and securing America. At the start of each segment, I will ask the same lead-off question to both candidates, and they will each have up to 2 minutes to respond. From that point until the end of the segment, we'll have an open discussion. The questions are mine and have not been shared with the commission or the campaigns. The audience here in the room has agreed to remain silent so that we can focus on what the candidates are saying. I will invite you to applaud, however, at this moment as we welcome the candidates. Democratic nominee for President of the United States, Hillary Clinton, and Republican nominee for President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good luck to you.
We
Well, I don't expect us to cover all the issues of this campaign tonight, but I remind everyone there are two more presidential debates scheduled. We are going to focus on many of the issues that voters tell us are most important, and we're going to press for specifics. I am honored to have this role, but this evening belongs to the candidates and just as important to the American people. Candidates, we look forward to hearing you articulate your policies and your positions, as well as your visions and your values. So, let's begin. We're calling this opening segment Achieving Prosperity, and central to that is jobs. There are two economic realities in America today. There's been a record 6 straight years of job growth, and new census numbers show incomes have increased at a record rate after years of stagnation. However, income inequality remains significant, and nearly half of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Beginning with you, Secretary Clinton, why are you a better choice than your opponent to create the kinds of jobs that will put more money into the pockets of American workers?
Well, thank you, Lester, and thanks to Hofstra for hosting us. The central question in this election is really what kind of country we want to be and what kind of future we'll build together. Today is my granddaughter's 2nd birthday, so I think about this a lot. First, we have to build an economy that works for everyone, not just those at the top. That means we need new jobs, good jobs, with rising incomes. I want us to invest in you. I want us to invest in your future. That means jobs in infrastructure, in advanced manufacturing, in innovation and technology, clean renewable energy, and small business, because most of the new jobs will come from small business. We also have to make the economy fairer. That starts with raising the national minimum wage and also guarantee, finally, equal pay for women's work. I also want to see more companies do profit sharing. If you help create the profits, you should be able to share in them, not just the executives at the top. And I want us to do more to support people who are struggling to balance family and work. I've heard from so many of you about the difficult choices you face and the stresses that you're under. So let's have paid family leave, earn sick days. Let's be sure we have affordable childcare and debt-free college. How are we going to do it? We're going to do it by having the wealthy pay their fair share and close the corporate loopholes. Finally, we tonight are on the stage together, Donald Trump and I. Donald, it's good to be with you. We're going to have a debate where we are talking about the important issues facing our country. You have to judge us. Who can shoulder the immense, awesome responsibilities of the presidency? Who can put into action the plans that will make your life better? I hope that I will be able to earn your vote on November 8th.
Secretary Clinton, thank you. Mr. Trump, the same question to you. It's about putting money, more money, into the pockets of American workers. You have up to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Lester. Our jobs are fleeing the country. They're going to Mexico. They're going to many other countries. You look at what China is doing to our country in terms of making our product. They're devaluing their currency, and there's nobody in our government to fight them. And we have a very good fight, and we have a winning fight, because they're using our country as a piggy bank to rebuild China, and many other countries are doing the same thing. So we're losing our good jobs, so many of them. When you look at what's happening in Mexico, a friend of mine who builds plants said it's the 8th wonder of the world. They're building some of the biggest plants anywhere in the world, some of the most sophisticated, some of the best plants. With the United States, as he said, not so much. So Ford is leaving. You see that, their small car division leaving. Thousands of jobs, leaving Michigan, leaving Ohio, they're all leaving, and we can't allow it to happen anymore. As far as child care is concerned and so many other things, I think Hillary and I agree on that. We probably disagree a little bit as to numbers and amounts and what we're going to do, but perhaps we'll be talking about that later. But we have to stop our jobs from being stolen from us. We have to stop our companies from leaving the United States, and with it, firing all of their people. All you have to do is take a look at Carrier Air Conditioning in Indianapolis. They left, fired 1,400 people. They're going to Mexico. So many, hundreds and hundreds of companies are doing this. We cannot let it happen. Under my plan, I'll be reducing taxes tremendously from 35% to 15% for companies, small and big businesses. That's going to be a job creator like we haven't seen since Ronald Reagan. It's going to be a beautiful thing to watch. Companies will come, they will build, they will expand, new companies will start. And I look very, very much forward to doing it. We have to renegotiate our trade deals, and we have to stop these countries from stealing our companies and our jobs.
Secretary Clinton, would you like to respond?
Well, I think that trade is an important issue. Of course, we are 5% of the world's population. We have to trade with the other 95%. And we need to have smart, fair trade deals. We also, though, need to have a tax system that rewards work and not just financial transactions. And the kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. In fact, it would be the most extreme version, the biggest tax cuts for the top percent of the people in this country than we've ever had. I call it trumped-up trickle-down, because that's exactly what it would be. That is not how we grow the economy. We just have a different view about what's best for growing the economy, how we make investments that will actually produce jobs and rising incomes. I think we come at it from somewhat different perspectives. I understand that. You know, Donald was very fortunate in his life, and that's all to his benefit. He started his business with $14 million borrowed from his father, and he really believes that the more you help wealthy people, the better off we'll be, and that everything will work out from there. I don't buy that. I have a different experience. My father was a small businessman. He worked really hard. He printed drapery fabrics on long tables where he pulled out those fabrics and he went down with a silk screen and dumped the paint in and took the squeegee and kept going. And so what I believe is the more we can do for the middle class, the more we can invest in you, your education, your skills, your future, the better we will be off and the better we'll grow. That's the kind of economy I want us to see again.
Let me follow up with Mr. Trump, if I can. You've talked about creating 25 million jobs, and you've promised to bring back millions of jobs for Americans. How are you going to bring back the industries that have left this country for cheaper labor overseas? How specifically are you going to tell American manufacturers that you have to come back?
Well, for one thing, and before we start on that, my father gave me a very small loan in 1975, and I built it into a company that's worth many, many billions of dollars with some of the greatest assets in the world. And I say that only because that's the kind of thinking that our country needs. Our country's in deep trouble. We don't know what we're doing when it comes to devaluations, and all of these countries all over the world, especially China, they're the best ever at it. What they're doing to us is a very, very sad thing. So we have to do that. We have to renegotiate our trade deals. And Lester, they're taking our jobs, they're giving incentives, they're doing things that, frankly, we don't do. Let me give you the example of Mexico. They have a VAT tax. We're in a different system. When we sell into Mexico, there's a tax. When they sell in automatic, 16% approximately. When they sell into us, there's no tax. It's a defective agreement. It's been defective for a long time, many years, but the politicians haven't done anything about it. Now, in all fairness to Secretary Clinton, yes, is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy. It's very important to me. But in all fairness to Secretary Clinton, when she started talking about this, it was really very recently. She's been doing this for 30 years. And why hasn't she made the agreements better? The NAFTA agreement is defective just because of the tax and many other reasons, but just because of the fact.
Let me interrupt just a moment. But
Secretary Clinton and others, politicians, should have been doing this for years, not right now because of the fact that we've created a movement. They should have been doing this for years. What's happened to our jobs and our country and our economy generally is, look, we owe $20 trillion. We cannot do it any longer, Lester.
Back to the question, though, how do you bring back, specifically bring back jobs? American manufacturers, how do you make them bring the jobs back?
Well, the first thing you do is don't let the jobs leave. The companies are leaving. There are thousands of them. They're leaving, and they're leaving in bigger numbers than ever. And what you do is you say, fine, you want to go to Mexico or some other country, good luck. We wish you a lot of luck. But if you think you're going to make your air conditioners or your cars or your cookies or whatever you make, and bring them into our country without a tax, you're wrong. And once you say you're going to have to tax them coming in, and our politicians never do this because they have special interests, and the special interests want those companies to leave because in many cases they own the companies. So what I'm saying is we can stop them from leaving. We have to stop them from leaving, and that's a big, big factor.
Let me let Secretary Clinton get
well,
there.
Well, let's stop for a second and remember where we were 8 years ago. We had the worst financial crisis, the Great Recession, the worst since the 1930s. That was in large part because of tax policies that slashed taxes on the wealthy, failed to invest in the middle class, took their eyes off of Wall Street, and created a perfect storm. In fact, Donald was one of the people who rooted for the housing crisis. He said back in 2006, gee, I hope it does collapse because then I can go in and buy some and make some money. Well, it did collapse.
That's called business, by the way.
9 million people. 9 million people lost their jobs. 5 million people lost their homes. And $13 trillion in family wealth was wiped out. Now, we have come back from that abyss, and it has not been easy. So we're now on the precipice of having a potentially much better economy, but the last thing we need to do is to go back to the policies that failed us in the first place. Independent experts have looked at what I've proposed and looked at what Donald's proposed, and basically they've said this, that if his tax plan, which would blow up the debt by over $5 trillion and would in some instances disadvantage middle-class families compared to the wealthy, were to go into effect, we would lose 3.5 million jobs and maybe have another recession. They've looked at my plans and they've said, okay, if we can do this, and I intend to get it done, we will have 10 million more new jobs because we will be making investments where we can grow the economy. Take clean energy. Some country is going to be the clean energy superpower of the 21st century. Donald thinks that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. I think it's real.
I do not say that.
And I think it's important that we grip this and deal with it both at home and abroad. And here's what we can do. We can deploy a half a billion more solar panels. We can have enough clean energy to power every home. We can build a new modern electric grid. That's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of new economic activity. So I've tried to be very specific about what we can and should do, and I am determined that we're going to get the economy really moving again, building on the progress we've made over the last 8 years, but never going back to what got us in trouble in the first place.
Mr. Trump.
She talks about solar panels. We invested in a solar company, our country. That was a disaster. They lost plenty of money on that one. Now, look, I'm a great believer in all forms of energy, but we're putting a lot of people out of work. Our energy policies are a disaster. Our country is losing so much in terms of energy, in terms of paying off our debt. You can't do what you're looking to do with $20 trillion in debt. The Obama administration, from the time they've come in, is over 230 years worth of debt, and he's topped it. He's doubled it in a course of almost 8 years, 7.5 years to be semi-exact. So I will tell you this. We have to do a much better job at keeping our jobs. And we have to do a much better job at giving companies incentive to build new companies or to expand because they're not doing it. And all you have to do is look at Michigan and look at Ohio and look at all of these places where so many of their jobs and their companies are just leaving. They're gone. And Hillary, I just ask you this. You've been doing this for 30 years. Why are you just thinking about these solutions right now? For 30 years, you've been doing it, and now you're just starting to think of solutions.
Well, actually,
I will bring back jobs. You can't bring back jobs.
Well, actually, I have thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah, for 30 years.
I have, not quite that long. I think my husband did a pretty good job in the 1990s. I think a lot about what worked and how we can make it work again.
Well, he approved NAFTA.
3 million new jobs,
he approved
a balanced
NAFTA,
budget.
Which is the single worst trade deal ever approved in this country.
Incomes went up for everybody. Manufacturing jobs went up also in the 1990s, if we're actually going to look at the facts. When I was in the Senate, I had a number of trade deals that came before me. And I held them all to the same test. Will they create jobs in America? Will they raise incomes in America? And are they good for our national security? Some of them I voted for. The biggest one, a multinational one known as CAFTA, I voted against. And because I hold the same standards as I look at all of these trade deals. But let's not assume that trade is the only challenge we have in the economy. I think it is a part of it, and I've said what I'm going to do. I'm going to have a special prosecutor. We're going to enforce the trade deals we have, and we're going to hold people accountable. When I was Secretary of State, we actually increased American exports globally 30%. We increased them to China 50%. So I know how to really work to get new jobs and to get exports that help to create more new jobs.
Well, you haven't done it in 30 years or 26 years.
Well,
any number you
I've been
to
a senator,
you
Donald,
haven't done it.
And
you haven't
I
done
have
it.
Been a
and
Secretary of State, and I have
your
done
husband signed NAFTA,
lot.
Which was one of the worst things that ever happened
well,
to the manufacturing industry.
That is your opinion.
You go to New England, you go to Ohio, Pennsylvania, you go anywhere you want, Secretary Clinton, and you will see devastation where manufacturing is down 30, 40, sometimes 50%. NAFTA is the worst trade deal maybe ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever signed in this country. And now you want to approve Trans-Pacific Partnership. You were totally in favor of it. Then you heard what I was saying, how bad it is, and you said, I can't win that debate. But you know that if you did win, you would approve that, and that will be almost as bad as NAFTA. Nothing will ever top NAFTA.
That is just not accurate. I was against it once it was finally negotiated and the terms were laid out. I wrote about that in...
You called it the gold standard. You called it the gold standard of trade deals. You said it's the finest deal you've ever seen.
No.
And then you heard what I said about it, and all of a sudden you were against it.
Well, Donald, I know you live in your own reality, but that is not the facts. The facts are, I did say, I hoped it would be a good deal, but when it was negotiated, which I was not responsible for, I concluded it wasn't. I wrote about that.
So is it President Obama's fault? Is it President Obama's fault?
Before you even announced. Look, there
Secretary, is it President Obama's fault?
There are different.
Because he's pushing it.
There are different views about what's good for our country, our economy, and our leadership in the world. And I think it's important to look at what we need to do to get the economy going again. That's why I said new jobs with rising incomes, investments, not in more tax cuts that would add $5 trillion to the debt.
But you have no plan.
Oh, I do.
Secretary, you have no plan.
A book about it. It's called Stronger Together. You can pick it up tomorrow.
That's about all you
folks. At the bookstore or at an airport near you.
We're going to move to.
But it's because I see this. We need to have strong growth, fair growth, sustained growth. We also have to look at how we help families balance the responsibilities at home and the responsibilities at business. So we have a very robust set of plans, and people who have looked at both of our plans have concluded that mine would create 10 million jobs and yours would lose us 3.5 million jobs and explode
the debt. You are going to approve one of the biggest tax cuts in history. You are going to approve one of the biggest tax increases in history. You are going to drive business out. Your regulations are a disaster, and you're going to increase regulations all over the place. And by the way, my tax cut is the biggest since Ronald Reagan. I'm very proud of it. It will create tremendous numbers of new jobs. But regulations, you are going to regulate these businesses out of existence. When I go around, Lester, I tell you this, I've been all over. And when I go around, despite the tax cut, the things that businesses and people like the most is the fact that I'm cutting regulation. You have regulations on top of regulations, and new companies cannot form, and old companies are going out of business, and you want to increase the regulations and make them even worse. I'm going to cut regulations, but I'm going to cut taxes big league, and you're going to raise taxes big league. End of story.
Let me get you to pause right there, because we're going to move into the next segment.
That can't be left
Please
to stand.
Please take 30
you know,
seconds.
I kind of assumed that there would be a lot of these charges and claims. And so
Facts. We
have taken the homepage of my website, HillaryClinton.com, and we've turned it into a fact checker. So if you want to see in real time what the facts are, please go and take a look.
And take a look at mine also, and you'll see.
Add a penny to the debt. And your plans would add $5 trillion to the debt. What I have proposed would cut regulations and streamline them for small businesses. What I have proposed would be paid for by raising taxes on the wealthy because they have made all the gains in the economy. And I think it's time that the wealthy and corporations paid their fair share to support this
country. Well, you just opened the next segment.
Well, look, could I just finish? I think I should.
You go to her website and take a look at her website.
She's going to raise taxes $1.3 trillion.
Mr. Trump, I'm
And look at her website. You know what? It's no different than this. She's telling us how to fight ISIS. Just go to her website. She tells you how to fight ISIS on her website. I don't think General Douglas MacArthur would like that
too much. The next segment, we're continuing
well,
the subject
of I have a plan to fight ISIS.
No, you're telling the enemy everything you want to do.
No, we're not.
No wonder you've been fighting. No wonder you've been fighting ISIS your entire adult life.
Folks, go to the fact checkers, get to work.
You are unpacking a lot here, and we're still in the issue of achieving prosperity. And I want to talk about taxes. The fundamental difference between the two of you concerns the wealthy. Secretary Clinton, you're calling for a tax increase in the wealthiest Americans. I'd like you to further defend that. And Mr. Trump, you're calling for tax cuts for the wealthy. I'd like you to defend that. And this next two-minute answer goes to you, Mr. Trump.
Well, I'm really calling for major jobs because the wealthy are going to create tremendous jobs. They're going to expand their companies. They're going to do a tremendous job. I'm getting rid of the carried interest provision. And if you really look, it's not a tax. It's really not a great thing for the wealthy. It's a great thing for the middle class. It's a great thing for companies to expand. And when these people are going to put billions and billions of dollars into companies, and when they're going to bring $2.5 trillion back from overseas, where they can't bring the money back because politicians like Secretary Clinton won't allow them to bring the money back because the taxes are so onerous and the bureaucratic red tape so what they're doing is they're leaving our country, and they're, believe it or not, leaving because taxes are too high and because some of them have lots of money outside of our country, and instead of bringing it back and putting the money to work because they can't work out a deal to, and everybody agrees it should be brought back, instead of that, they're leaving our country to get their money because they can't bring their money back into our country because of bureaucratic red tape, because they can't get together, because we have a president that can't sit them around a table and get them to approve something. And here's the thing, Republicans and Democrats agree that this should be done. $2.5 trillion. I happen to think it's double that. It's probably $5 trillion that we can't bring into our country, Lester. And with a little leadership, you'd get it in here very quickly, and it could be put to use on the inner cities and lots of other things, and it would be beautiful. But we have no leadership. And honestly, that starts with Secretary Clinton.
All right, you have 2 minutes on the same question to defend tax increases on the wealthiest Americans, Secretary Clinton.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? join the debate by saying more crazy things. Now, let me say,
there's nothing crazy about not letting our companies bring their money back into their country.
This is Secretary Clinton's 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, well, let's start the clock again, Lester. We've looked at your tax proposals. I don't see changes in the corporate tax rates or the kinds of proposals you're referring to that would cause the repatriation, bringing back of money that's stranded overseas. I happen to
then you support didn't read
that.
It.
I happen to support that in a way that will actually work to our benefit. But when I look at what you have proposed, you have what is called now the Trump loophole, because it would so advantage you and the business you do. You've proposed an approach that has a $4 billion tax benefit for your family. And when you look at what
how much for my family?
It is, Lester, as I said, trumped up trickle down. Trickle down did not work. It got us into the mess we were in 2008 and 9. Slashing taxes on the wealthy hasn't worked, and a lot of really smart, wealthy people know that. And they are saying, hey, we need to do more to make the contributions we should be making to rebuild the middle class. I don't think top-down works in America.